Eddie, the 10-year reunion. Chapter 4. Autumn, Part 2. On the Wednesday before the dedication of the new Northside High School track, Captain Richard Hayes drives into Eddie's service station to say hello, as he often does. Not seeing Richard for 2 weeks, Eddie yells out, "Hey, Richard. Where have you been?" Richard yells back, "It's a busy time of the year. School just started. Traffic is a mess. Automobile collisions. And my daughter, Cindy, can't wait until the track season begins. She had a good season last year." Eddie asks, "Is Cindy still wanting to throw the hammer?" Richard replies, "Right now, she's more interested in the discus. She tells me she wants a discus for Christmas. I don't even know where to buy a discus." Eddie informs Richard, "Kathy's father can get one for you." Richard replies, "Why didn't I think of that? I'll walk down the street and talk to him sometime." Eddie tells Richard, "Hey, I have some good news." Richard asks, "What's that?" Eddie replies, "The Chucky is suing me, Kathy, Mark, and Paula." Looking quite puzzled, Richard asks, "Wait a second. How is that good news?" Eddie explains, "The Chucky claims we were trespassing on his property on Saturday, July 20th, right before lunch." Richard asks, "Why does that date ring a bell?" Eddie replies, "Because that's the date we were all at the high school, laying sod, when the Chucky claims we were at his house terrorizing him or something." Richard laughs and tells Eddie, "That's right. You know, I hope they call me as a witness in that case. I was at the high school when Officer Wilson drove up and told us about that. We were eating pizza. And we got a copy of the video. You guys were there from about 7 a.m. until about 4:30 p.m., according to the timestamp on the video." Eddie tells Richard, "I can't wait to hear what Chucky's attorney is going to say." Richard laughs and replies, "This one is really going to be interesting." Richard then explains, "This Charles Black character is a real piece of work. On Monday, he filed a complaint against Officer Braden. This character alleges that Officer Braden looks at his house a lot. The desk sergeant told Black that there is no law against looking at someone's house. So, the desk sergeant took the complaint and filed it." Eddie replies, "Wow. It sounds like the Chucky is after everyone now. I wonder who's next." Richard replies, "I don't know. It would really be nice to get that character off the streets again." Eddie then informs Richard, "If I had to guess, I'd say Braden looks at the Chucky's house to make sure there's not a gun pointed at him. Recalling an incident from a few months ago when a bullet was fired at Braden's house," Richard replies, "I can totally understand that." Changing the subject, Eddie asks Richard, "The dedication of the new high school track is this weekend. Are you going to make it?" Richard replies, "Cindy keeps reminding me. She really wants to go, along with a few of her friends. Someday, they'll be running on that track." Eddie informs Richard, "There'll be a few exhibition events. I'll be running in a 100-meter dash. Kathy will be throwing the discus. Bobby B will be showing off his shot put skills. Me, Mark, Braden, and Johnson will be running a 4x400-meter relay and racing the high school team." Eddie then offers, "If you want, I can set it up so Cindy and her friends can run in one of the events." Richard replies, "Wow. Thank you. I'm sure she'd really like that." Eddie tells Richard, "With any luck, Cindy might be able to get on television." Quite surprised, Richard asks, "Television? Really?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. Angela, Mitchell, and Hoffa will be putting the dedication on the air. From what I hear, parts of the dedication will be used for a documentary on track and field." Richard exclaims, "Wow. This sounds like a big production." Eddie replies, "It wasn't originally meant to be that big of an event, but it's turning out to be one. Mitchell put a lot of work into publicizing the dedication." Eddie tells Richard, have Cindy and her friends come dressed in their running outfits. We'll get them on the track. Richard replies, thank you so much. I'll let her know. She's going to be really excited. Eddie and Richard talk for a while, then Richard has to get back to the police station. After Richard leaves, Eddie gets back to work, glad to hear that Richard's daughter, Cindy, has developed an interest in track. The day of the big event arrives. Mitchell, Hoffa, Angela, and the production crew are the first to arrive at the new Northside High School track. Hoffa works closely with the production crew as they get the television equipment set up. Arriving second is Johnson, who takes a walk around the track, making sure everything is up to spec. At around 9 a.m., a few spectators begin to arrive for the 10 a.m. ceremony. As the morning moves along, Mitchell, who publicized the event, realizes that he, perhaps, did too good a job. From Mitchell's vantage point, the dedication is beginning to look like a standing room only event. In fact, the parking lot at Dr. Akinmola's church across the street is beginning to fill up. Eddie and Kathy drive into the administration building parking lot, which has been reserved for special guests. Getting out of their Volkswagen bus, Kathy mentions, wow. It looks really crowded. Looking down the parking lot where he, Mark, and Paula once raced Kathy in her Porsche 914, Eddie replies, I see that. Kathy asks Eddie, you know why, don't you? Eddie asks, why? Kathy replies, because you, and the rest of the tribe who set world records, are here. They came to see you run. All of a sudden, Eddie realizes that he will not be afforded the opportunity to slack off on the track today. Kathy already knows that she cannot slack off when throwing the discus. Eddie and Kathy walk to the VIP seating section, which is a smaller set of bleachers having actual seats rather than a bench. Situated near the finish line for both the sprints and distance races, the relay transition zone, and the field events, those sitting in the VIP section will have a great view of the events. Eddie looks over at the launching zone for the field implements, seeing the shot put, discus, hammer, and javelin all waiting to be thrown. At the edge of the red zone, near the finish line, Eddie sees seven high school girls in uniforms with stopwatches hanging around their necks, reminiscent of when Kathy helped with the team before she ran for the high school. Among them is Karen Coy, who is working on her PhD at the university and is still working with the high school team as a paid intern. Looking around, Kathy mentions to Eddie, this is so sad. Not quite understanding, Eddie asks, what? What are you talking about? Kathy replies, they forgot to install Mr. Crumb's special seat. Eddie asks, Mr. Crumb's special seat. Okay, out with it, Katerina. I can't wait to hear this. Kathy replies, yeah. Mr. Crumb's special seat. Right in the middle of the red zone, where the discus and javelin would normally land. Eddie laughs and replies, seriously. And we can put a seatbelt on the seat, with a lock, so he can't escape. Dr. Noreen Brooks, the superintendent of schools, walks over, telling Eddie, it appears we have a really great turnout today. Eddie replies, I see that. I wasn't expecting this. Dr. Brooks agrees, telling Eddie, I don't think any of us were expecting this big a turnout. With the stands full and spectators standing at both ends of the oval track, the turnout is far greater than expected. With about 10 minutes before the ceremony begins, Dr. Brooks inquires of Eddie, you mentioned earlier this week that there's a middle school girl who would love to run today. Who was that? Eddie replies, that's Cindy Hayes. She's Captain Hayes' daughter. Cindy is somewhere in the stands with her family and a few of her friends. Dr. Brooks makes a few notes and tells Eddie, this is very important. We'll be sure to fit it in. Eddie and Kathy take a seat alongside Mark and Paula in the VIP section. Mark, who always scans the stands for people he may know, tells Eddie, you'll never guess who's here. Taking a wild guess, Eddie replies, the Chucky. Mark replies, no, worse. Eddie tells Mark, It doesn't get much worse than the Chucky, bro. Mark replies, except for McCrutchen. He's in the stands, on the top row, over on the right. Eddie glances over to where McCutcheon is seated, and comments, I wonder what he's doing here. Why Todd McCutcheon is in attendance today is anybody's guess. Also attending the ceremony today is Mr. Crumpler, Dr. Larry Gable, Dr. Nicholson, and Dr. Gregory, who coach track and field in the university's division. Mr. Victor Pushkin, who previously coached at Liberty High School, is also present today. Mr. Pushkin, now a first-year coach at a university in the division, remembers Mr. Fraser quite well. Captain Hayes is also present with his family, along with a few of Cindy's friends. Daryl Stone, the Olympic gold medalist in the 1,500-meter run, is also at the ceremony. Stone likes to hear Mr. Fraser's motivational speeches, but today he is out of luck. Mr. Fraser will not be speaking at today's ceremony. Athena Layton, who wouldn't miss the event for the world, is also present, sitting in the VIP section. And, from the middle school, Mr. Harris has been looking forward to today since last winter, when he heard of the plans of the new track. The ceremony begins with Dr. Brooks leading the audience in the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by the Northside High School marching band playing the Star Spangled Banner. The band, led by Mr. Barrett, the music teacher, will get a short break before they practice on the football field later in the afternoon. Once the band has left the red zone, Dr. Brooks walks up to the podium and addresses the crowd. Greeting those in attendance, Dr. Brooks announces, "Good morning." Most everyone energetically replies, "Good morning." Dr. Brooks continues, "We have quite the turnout here today. Thank you all for coming out this morning to take part in this great moment in history for not only our high school, but our entire school district. This is truly a special day for all of us here in the Northside School District." Recalling history, Dr. Brooks continues, "About 10 years ago, I personally met a member of the Northside High School track team. His name was Edward Boganskaya. Some of you know Edward for his accomplishments on the track, specifically for breaking the world record in the 100-meter dash. During that season, I also got to know Mark Svoboda, Axel Braden, Gary Mitchell, Robert Bradshaw, and our own Eric Johnson, who is now the coach of our high school's track team. Since graduating from Northside High, they have all made significant contributions in the sport of track and field." The audience claps and cheers, many who are familiar with what Dr. Brooks has eloquently orated. Without further ado, Dr. Brooks dedicates the new track, declaring, "Our new track and field venue at Northside High School provides an unprecedented opportunity for our student athletes to demonstrate their skills and abilities. This new track will also allow us to host events such as regional meets, special competitions, and sporting events in addition to our regularly scheduled meets. The possibilities and opportunities this new venue brings to our district are endless." Dr. Brooks continues, "For those of you who have not had the chance to see the plaque to my right, allow me the opportunity to read to you what is thoughtfully inscribed on it. The plaque reads, it is with deep heartfelt gratitude that the administrators, faculty, coaches, students, and friends of Northside High School give thanks to Edward Boganskaya, Katerina Karakova Boganskaya, Mark Svoboda, Paula Giovanni Svoboda, Robert Bradshaw, Erica Gabriel Bradshaw, for the George W. Fraser Northside High School track and field sporting venue. The plaque also lists Louis Zeno as the architect, Mark Svoboda as the general contractor, and Gerhard Zunde as the consultant." Looking over to the VIP seating area, Dr. Brooks announces, "Will those whom I just mentioned please stand?" The group responsible for the new track all stand and wave to the crowd, who cheer in return. Offering details, Dr. Brooks tells her audience, "You might recognize that all of the names I have mentioned are associated with Northside High School in one way or another. Edward, Kathy, Mark, Paula, Robert, Erica, Eric, and Louis all attended Northside High School and were members of the track team. Many of you know Gerhard Zunde as our district's athletic director and our field events coach. And how can we forget Mr. George Fraser? George Fraser has not only brought exceptional talent to the sport himself, but taught others to excel at track and field. George Fraser has not only coached many athletes to their way of breaking several world records, but he has taught them to be leaders in their community. Knowing that there is much more on today's agenda, Dr. Brooks tells her audience, in conclusion, I would like to thank all those who played a part in making today possible. I would like to thank our distinguished guests and everyone in the audience for taking time out of your busy schedules to be here for the dedication today. I would especially like to thank Edward Bogenskaya, who spearheaded this effort. For without his dedication, determination, and vision, none of this would have been possible. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you today. The audience claps and cheers again, looking forward to what is coming up. Dr. Zunde, who is the meet announcer for today's events, steps up to the podium and announces, "Thank you, Dr. Brooks. We are also grateful that you took time out of your schedule to be with everyone here today. Thank you very much." Dr. Brooks, quite aware of her warm welcome this morning, receives another standing ovation. Dr. Brooks takes a seat in the VIP section next to Mr. Fraser, whom she has come to know very well over the years. Getting down to business, Dr. Zunde continues, "Since this is a track and field venue, we have organized a few events to demonstrate to you what you will typically see during a track and field event. The first event is a very special event. In the first event, Eddie and Kathy's son, Eddie Jr., Mark and Paula's son and daughter, Mark Jr. and Dawn, and Axel Braden's son, Hunter, will compete in a 100-meter dash. These future track stars are in the 2 to 4 year old range and may someday be running for Northside High School right here on this track. Please focus your attention on the starting line where the race is about to begin. At the starting line, the four runners are standing behind the starting blocks. The starter announces, "On your marks." Stepping in front of the blocks and getting into position, the four runners give the clear impression that, despite their age, they've done this a few times before. The starter announces, "Set," and the four young kids show the audience that they know exactly what to do. The starter fires the gun, and the four competitors run toward the starting line as if something big is at stake. Eddie Jr. takes the lead, but in this age group, 1 year makes a very big difference. Mark Jr. is in second place, with his sister, Dawn, not relenting in the least. And Hunter, the youngest in the group, chases down Dawn. The crowd cheers as Eddie Jr. crosses the finish line, taking first place. Mark Jr. takes second place, with his sister taking third place. Hunter, not the least bit disappointed, crosses the finish line and runs over to Braden and Wendy, who give him a high five. Dr. Zunde announces, "While I am unaware of the record in the 100-meter dash for someone who is almost 4 years old, the winning time in this race is 17.4 seconds, which is a great accomplishment for someone of Eddie Jr.'s age group." The crowd cheers as Kathy walks out to the finish line telling her son, "That was your best run ever." Eddie Jr. replies, "I had to run really, really, really fast because lots of people are watching me." Kathy tells Eddie Jr., "You did really, really good." Kathy gives Eddie Jr. a high five, and they take a seat with the rest of the group in the VIP section. Dr. Zunde announces, "Please now focus your attention on the shot put pad, where Robert Bradshaw, who once held the world record in this event, will demonstrate to you how the shot put is thrown." Bobby B. picks up the shot put, tossing it into the air a few times as if it were a softball. Stepping onto the shot put pad, Bobby B. gets into position. Using the discus technique, Bobby B. goes into the spin and, letting out a primal scream, hurls the shot put with more force than anyone ever expected today. Soaring through the air, the shot put lands beyond the 20-meter mark. The crowd cheers as Bobby B. steps off the pad. The student field judges take the measurement, demonstrating yet another facet of track and field competition. Receiving the measurement, Dr. Zunde proudly announces, Robert Bradshaw's throw came in at 22.2 meters. If this were a high school meet, college meet, or international competition, Robert's throw here today would have easily taken the gold medal. Please lend a hand to Robert Bradshaw. The crowd cheers, now knowing they've witnessed a world-class throw today. What the crowd does not know is that Bobby B. poured a shot put pad in his backyard and practices quite regularly. Today's casual throw was not at all his best. Bobby B. walks over to the hammer pad and Dr. Zunde announces, please now focus your attention on the hammer pad where Robert Bradshaw, who just threw the shot put, will now demonstrate to you how the hammer is thrown. Bobby B. picks up the hammer, swinging it around like it is a yo-yo. Stepping onto the pad, Bobby B. gets into position. Going into the spin, Bobby B. gains as much rotational velocity as he can. Letting out yet another primal scream, Bobby B. releases the hammer, which soars through the air, coming to its resting place just beyond the 75-meter mark. The crowd cheers as Bobby B. waves to the crowd and steps off the pad. A student assistant drives out to the field, driving a really cool electric golf cart, and retrieves the hammer. The golf cart, extensively modified from its original condition by Eddie, has been raised with a lift kit, fitted with a receiver hitch, and equipped with a 72-volt drive system, enabling it to attain a speed of 50 miles per hour. Once Eddie was finished with his modifications, Vinny, at the body shop, gave the golf cart an awesome paint job. Wanting to recognize the student assistants, Dr. Zunde announces, driving the golf cart out to the red zone to retrieve the hammer is Jenny Thompson, one of our high school's valued team assistants. Once the hammer has been retrieved, Dr. Zunde announces, please now focus your attention on the discus pad where Katerina Karakova-Boganskaya is about to throw the discus. Kathy once threw the discus for Northside High School and for the State University where George Fraser is now the track coach. The 6-foot-tall, 185-pound discus girl is handed the discus and walks toward the discus pad. Kathy tosses her keys and the first medal she ever won in track and field onto the grass and waves to the crowd. Seeing Kathy getting ready to throw, the crowd gets very quiet, not quite knowing what to expect from a woman throwing the discus. Kathy waves to the crowd again as she steps onto the discus pad. Kathy goes into the wind-up and into the spin with form just as perfect as she had years ago. Kathy releases the discus, letting out a primal scream heard by everyone around. The crowd suddenly cheers when they see where Kathy's throw lands. The crowd is quite amazed that a woman can throw the discus that far. During this trip to the red zone to retrieve the discus is a different student assistant driving the golf cart. Apparently, driving the golf cart is a cool thing to do among this group, so they take turns. Dr. Zunde announces, driving the golf cart out to retrieve the discus from the red zone is Megan Reese, another one of our team assistants. Waving to the crowd, Kathy walks off the discus pad shedding a tear that no one sees. Missing her competition years, Kathy thinks back to her fan club that came down from the stands following a meet to see her. Kathy also recalls accidentally hitting Mr. Crumb with a discus that, at the time, seemed like a very serious issue. Today, Kathy laughs at that incident, taking it much less seriously than during her high school years. Walking back to the VIP seating area, Kathy sees Mitchell warming up for the 1 mile run, which will occur immediately after the 400 meter dash. With the events moving along very quickly, Dr. Zunde announces, please focus your attention on the starting line, where Axel Braden will single-handedly take on the Northside High School's 400-meter team. Running for Northside High School is Bill Hoffman, Jason Osborne, Ray Jones, and Eddie Lee Washington. Dr. Zunde suspects Braden will win this race, but by how much is the question? Osborne, however, naively thinks he will beat Braden. Braden, the world record holder in this event, walks up to the starting line, waving to the crowd. Arriving at the starting line, Brayden quietly announces to his competition, "Are you guys ready for your ass kicking?" Osborne, who has heard about Brayden's pre-race antics from Johnson, confidently boasts, "Yeah. We're ready to kick anyone's ass who steps on our track." Complimenting Osborne, Brayden energetically replies, "That's real good. I like your attitude. Keep it up." Brayden suddenly gets serious, lowers his voice, and informs Osborne, "But you got a big problem. You ain't got no track. Your track was hauled off to the county dump. This ain't your track yet." Blindsided by Brayden's unusual greeting, Osborne is at a loss for words. Osborne is saved by the bell when the starter announces, "On your marks." Brayden, standing behind the starting blocks, does a somersault in mid-air and lands perfectly into the blocks. It is easy for anyone to conclude that Brayden has practiced that move for quite a while. In fact, Brayden perfected that move at his pool, where landing into the water will not cause too much pain if he landed wrong as he developed the technique. Washington confidently whispers to Osborne, "He's getting old. We'll beat him." The starter announces, "Set," and the runners get into the set position. Learning from Eddie years ago, Brayden sees that the starter has the gun to his side, not behind his back where it should be. Brayden, seeing the starter's finger begin to move, leaves the block simultaneously with the firing of the gun. Osborne cannot believe how fast Brayden was out of the blocks. Nearly halfway into the first curve before the north side runners even enter the curve, Brayden clearly demonstrates that he is still the master of the track. From Washington's perspective, he quickly realized that he grossly underestimated Brayden's ability, thinking that Brayden is getting old. From Osborne's perspective, Brayden is embarrassing him, especially since Osborne's girlfriend is in the stands watching. As Brayden crosses the 200-meter mark on the back straightaway, Mr. Fraser looks at his stopwatch and exclaims, "He's clocking. I clocked him at 22. He's clocking. Watch this." Mr. Fraser has good reason to be excited. A 22-second 200-meter split is on par with Brayden's world record time of 43.75 seconds. 4 seconds later, Osborne, running a respectable race, crosses the 200-meter mark. The rest of the Northside team closely follows Osborne. Along the back straightaway, Eddie Lee Washington passes Osborne, which is quite the surprise to Johnson. Last year, Osborne was Northside High School's best at this event by a slim margin at a time when Washington was number 3. Johnson rightly concludes that Washington has been doing a lot of training over the summer. The four Northside runners fight it out along the back straightaway, but it doesn't matter. Brayden is already well into the second curve. Coming out of the final curve, Brayden is running as if a gold medal is at stake. Mr. Fraser again exclaims, "He's clocking. Watch this." Johnson, who already knows Braden's current abilities, has his eyes on Washington, ready to record his time. Crossing the finish line, Brayden takes first place, but no one really expected anything different, except, perhaps, the Northside team that is still on the track. In the upset of the day, Washington crosses second, with Osborne finishing in third place. Hoffman and Jones tie for fourth place. Brayden receives a few high fives, grabs a bottle of Gatorade, and takes a walk. Mr. Fraser energetically announces, "I got 44.2 seconds. He was clocking. What else is on the clock? What do we got?" Mr. Fraser, to say the least, is quite impressed. Sounding just like Mr. Fraser, Johnson exclaims, "I clocked Washington at 52.8. With the indoor track season only 4 months away, Johnson is quite pleased with his team's performance. With the events moving along very quickly, Dr. Zunday announces, "Please now focus your attention on the starting line, where Gary Mitchell will take on the Northside High School distance team in a 1 mile run." For those of you who do not know, Gary Mitchell ran for Northside High School a decade ago, and later ran for the State University. Although this is an exhibition event, Mitchell is taking this event very seriously, as this race is slated to be part of his documentary. David Hall, the superstar running for Northside High School, fully expects to beat the aging Mitchell, who is now 27 years old. But what Hall does not know is that Mitchell has been extensively training since he left the university and is a nationally ranked marathon runner. The starter announces, "Set." Mitchell, who was granted the inside lane, gets into position. The gun is fired, and Mitchell takes off, as if he is running a 100-meter dash. In the VIP section, Athena asks Kathy, "Has Gary Mitchell been training?" Kathy replies, "Oh, yeah. He never stopped." Knowing that Kathy has great insight into how a race will turn out, Provost Layton asks Kathy, "What do you see happening?" Kathy replies, "From what I hear, Hall is pretty good. But Mitchell will beat him." Athena observes, "You're really that confident?" Kathy replies, "Yeah. Mitchell has something to prove." Athena curiously asks, "What would that be, if you don't mind me asking?" Kathy explains, "Eddie, Mark, Johnson, Braden, and Bobby B have all set world records. Mitchell, the only one in the group, hasn't. Mitchell is after the record today." As Mitchell passes the starting line, Kathy looks down at her stopwatch and tells Athena that was a 54-second 400 meter. Mitchell's booking it. 8 seconds later, Hall completes his first lap. Athena asks Kathy, "What is the world record in the mile, anyway?" Kathy, who looked it up last night, replies, "It's 3:46.32. Now watching the race closely, Athena is carefully studying how Mitchell runs, hoping to gain the same insight into the unseen strategy that Kathy has. Truth is, however, that Kathy's ability to see how a race will unfold is more of a gift than analysis or logic. And with Mitchell having only the clock as his competitor out there today, Athena will not learn much of Mitchell's strategy. At the half-mile mark, Mitchell delivers another 54-second quarter mile, surprising everyone. Hall, now trailing significantly, is confident that Mitchell will burn himself out. But Hall, who has been taking the track and field class at the university, has been taught by Mr. Fraser to run his own race. If Hall were to keep pace with Mitchell, Hall would likely be the one to burn out and come in last place. Athena mentions to Kathy, "Mitchell has been running quite the pace." Kathy confidently replies, "He's been running marathons and practicing his sprints. This is nothing for him." Now into his third lap, Mitchell enjoys a half-lap lead over Hall. Slowing his pace, Mitchell runs his third lap at about a 60-second pace. Hall recognizes Mitchell's sudden change in speed, expecting him to falter during his last lap. But Mitchell, who has some sort of internal timing device in his brain, traverses the track with a pace consistent with a Swiss timepiece. Mitchell enters his final lap. Mr. Fraser, who has two stopwatches running, gets out of his seat and exclaims, "He's clocking. Can you believe this?" Mr. Fraser also has his eyes on Hall, who will be running for the university next year. So do Mr. Crumpler, Dr. Larry Gable, Dr. Nicholson, and Dr. Gregory, who all hope to pick Hall up for next year's season. But the audience's eyes are all on Mitchell, who has picked up the pace during his final lap. Mitchell comes out of the final curve, sprinting toward the finish line. Looking at her stopwatch, Kathy exclaims, "He's going for it. He's going to break the record." Kathy rushes to the finish line, followed by Athena, Mr. Fraser, and a few others. Mr. Fraser tells the timekeepers, "Somebody, catch his time. Get this on the clock." Giving it all he has, Mitchell sprints to the finish line, which is about 10 yards past the starting line. Mitchell crosses first, with four stopwatches documenting his performance today. Mitchell jogs off his run, knowing it was a very good one. Wasting no time, Mr. Fraser compares the four stopwatches, all which tell the same story. But the race is not over. Focusing back on the finish line, Mr. Fraser and Kathy, along with the timekeepers, are ready to capture Hall's time. Hall crosses second, with one of his better runs. But the race is still not over. Over the next 45 seconds, the remainder of the high school's distance team crosses the finish line one by one. Mitchell returns to the finish line, impatiently asking, "How did I do? What did I get?" Mr. Fraser, who doesn't even hear what Mitchell asked, exclaims, "You broke the record. You ran a 3:45.1. You were clocking." Coming back to reality, a smile comes across Mitchell's face, who replies, "Yes. Yes. Finally." Mr. Fraser gives Mitchell a high five, a pat on the back, and a victory hug. Returning to the VIP seating area, Mitchell is greeted with more high fives, victory hugs, and fist bumps. Dr. Zunde walks up to the podium and announces, "May I have your attention, please? It's not every day that I get the opportunity to make an announcement like this. Gary Mitchell, who you just saw win the 1 mile run with a time of 3:45.1, has just broken the world record in that event. Please lend your hand in congratulating Gary on his awesome accomplishment here today." The crowd cheers and claps, giving Mitchell a standing ovation. No one except perhaps Mitchell was expecting the record to be broken in the 1 mile run today. In the light of Mitchell unofficially breaking the world record, the exhibition must go on. Dr. Zunde announces, "Please focus your attention once more to the starting line, where Edward Boganskaya and Mark Svoboda will race in the 100-meter dash. They will be joined by Jason Osborne and Bill Hoffman, running for Northside High School. At the starting line, the visitors, Eddie and Mark, have been granted lanes 3 and 4. Hearing earlier that Eddie and Mark have kept up their training, Osborne and Hoffman do not expect to win, but they will certainly give it their best effort. At the starting line, Hoffman and Osborne are very quiet, knowing that they are running against the world's best. Eddie asks Hoffman and Osborne, "So, you guys are Johnson Star sprinters?" Hoffman replies, "Yeah." Osborne replies, "I'm the star sprinter. Hoffman is the caboose." Mark laughs and tells Hoffman, "Don't take any of that shit from him." Hoffman tells Mark, "He always messes with everyone." Eddie laughs and comments, "Just like Mark used to." Osborne, who was already up against Braden earlier, boasts, "I'm the master of messing, and I'm gonna keep you guessing." Mark comments to Eddie, "He sounds more like Braden to me." Eddie suggests to Osborne, "You should talk with Mark and Braden about messing with people before the race. They are masters at that." Osborne wants to hear more, but the starter announces, "On your marks," shortly followed by a set. The gun is fired and the runners are out of the blocks like a gold medal is at stake. Hoffman and Osborne quickly realize that the old guys are much more of a match than they ever expected. At 50 meters, Eddie and Mark are head to head. So are Hoffman and Osborne, who are 5 meters behind Eddie and Mark. At 75 meters, Eddie pulls slightly ahead of Mark. At the finish line, Eddie crosses first and Mark second. Slightly less than 1 second later, Osborne edges out Hoffman by barely 1 meter, both very surprised that they got beaten so easily. At the finish line, Johnson tells Osborne and Hoffman, "You guys were supposed to run, not walk." Osborne exclaims, "Those guys are fast." Hoffman exclaims, "No shit." The timekeepers give the times to Johnson, who announces to the four runners, "Eddie, 10.1 seconds. Mark, probably 10.15 seconds. Osborne, 10.7 seconds. Hoffman, 10.75 seconds. Stopwatches are only accurate to 1/10 of a second, and since both Eddie's and Mark's times show 10.1 seconds, it is difficult to determine the exact time of either runner. Eddie and Mark shake hands with Osborne and Hoffman, and they all head back to the VIP area with Johnson, where Dr. Zunde is preparing to make the next announcement. After the race, Osborne asks Mark, "So, you're the guy who's famous for messing with everyone?" Before Mark can answer, Eddie replies, "That's him. Mark Svoboda, in the flesh." Osborne, who claimed to be the master of messing earlier, asks Mark, does that shit really work? Mark replies, yeah. Of course it does. It works really good. To Mark, Osborne does not appear very confident that distraction techniques work. Johnson tells Osborne, someone got a master's degree researching Mark's distraction techniques. I got a copy of it in my office. You should check it out sometime. Mark smiles and tells Osborne, I'll show you later how good it works. Osborne energetically replies, good. I'm looking forward to it. Mark grins, apparently having something up his sleeve. Dr. Zunday announces, Cindy Hayes, please come down from the stands and report to the starting line with your friends. All excited, Cindy and her friends come down from the stands, ecstatic that they are going to get to run on the new track. While Cindy and her friends are making her way to the starting line, Dr. Zunday announces, Cindy and her classmates attend our middle school. In just a moment, they will be running a 100-meter dash. While we are waiting, I'll make the next announcement. Following the girls' 100-meter dash, the undefeated relay team of Edward Boganskaya, Mark Svoboda, Axel Braden, and Northside High School's track coach, Eric Johnson, will be running a 4x400-meter relay. If you have followed track and field over the years, you may recall that this relay team broke the world record some years back. Their world record of 2:56.02 still stands today. They will be running against the high school's 4x400-meter relay team, which is Bill Hoffman, Jason Osborne, Ray Jones, and Eddie Lee Washington. That's one race you definitely won't want to miss. Cindy and three of her friends arrive at the starting line, excited and ready to run. One of the timekeepers hands Dr. Zunday a piece of paper with the names of the girls running in the next event. Dr. Zunday announces, running in the next event, the 100-meter dash, is Cindy Hayes, Ellen Hunter, Jenny Floyd, and Tiffany Brannan. These four girls are on our middle school track team, where Mr. Harris is the coach. And, from what I understand, these girls are all quite fast. Paying close attention to Tiffany Brannan is Johnson, for next year she will be a freshman at the high school. Paying close attention to her performance today will be Tiffany, who knows her future coach will be watching her closely during this race. The starter announces, on your marks, and the four girls get into the blocks. The crowd is mostly quiet, except for a small group of middle school students who cheer quite loudly. The starter announces, set, and the girls get into the set position. The gun is fired, and the four girls are out to prove who is the fastest. Tiffany takes a quick lead, but she is the fastest girl in middle school this year. Running faster than she ever has, Cindy follows closely behind. Ellen and Jenny chase down Cindy in a fight to the finish, watched closely by their coach, Mr. Harris. At the finish line, Tiffany crosses first, followed more closely by Cindy than anyone expected. As usual, Ellen and Jenny nearly tie and argue over who beat whom at the finish line. At the finish line, Mr. Harris exclaims, good run. Good run. Seeing only their effort, Mr. Harris is unaware of the girls' times. The timekeepers report to Mr. Harris that Tiffany ran a 12.1 and Cindy ran a 12.4. Ellen and Jenny appeared to tie at 12.8 seconds. All those times are great for middle school girls. But that is to be expected, for they have all been training under Mr. Harris for several years. As the girls exchange hugs, Mr. Harris tells them, if you want, you guys can hang around here for the rest of the ceremony. Speaking for the group, Tiffany energetically replies, we'd love to. Mr. Harris then instructs the girls, pay very close attention to this next relay race, especially the transitions. This is what you can expect when you get to an advanced level. Mr. Harris wants the girls to have a good close-up view of what is expected to be a world-class performance. The girls take a seat in the VIP section, now feeling very special. On the track, the high school's 4x400-meter relay team is getting ready to race Eddie and the wrecking crew. At the starting line, Eddie asks, "What order are we running in?" Mark shrugs his shoulders and asks Johnson, "What leg does Osborne usually run?" Johnson replies, "He's the second leg." Mark tells the group, "I want to lead off." Knowing that Mark usually leads off, Johnson suggests to the group, "Why don't we just run in our usual order?" Eddie replies, "That sounds good." Mark takes the baton and gets into lane one. Hoffman gets into lane two, wondering how fast Mark is at 400 meters. On the sidelines, Coach Johnson tells Osborne, Jones, and Washington, "You guys are on your own. Good luck. You'll need it." Johnson is clear that he will not be cutting his high school relay team any slack. And Johnson appears to know something that his high school team does not. The starter announces, "On your marks." Hoffman quickly gets into the blocks. Mark, taking his time, waves to the crowd, gaining applause as he lollygags toward the starting blocks. Mark positions himself into the blocks, tempted to ask Hoffman whether his blocks are set correctly. But this race is an exhibition event, so Mark acts reasonably normal, at least for the moment. The starter announces, "Set," and energy levels rise. Mark, watching the starter's finger, is waiting for any signs of motion. The gun is fired, and the runners are out of the blocks. Anticipating the gun, Mark procures an immediate one-step lead. Mark, who has continued to train since his university days, takes a quick and substantial early lead over Hoffman. Athena mentions to Kathy, "It looks like Mark is taking this race very seriously." Kathy replies, "Eddie and the guys still take track seriously. They are not playing around." As Mark approaches the 200-meter mark, Kathy tells Athena, "That was a 22-second split." 6 seconds later, Hoffman crosses the 200-meter mark. Mark comes around the curve, where Johnson is on the track waiting for him. Athena watches carefully as Mark approaches the transition zone. Still flawless in the non-visual, non-verbal exchange, Mark delivers the goods to Johnson. Giving the distinct impression that something is drastically wrong, Mark quickly rushes back to the transition zone. As Hoffman approaches the transition zone, with a look of dire desperation on his face, Mark repeatedly points to Osborne's shoes as if there is some sort of problem. Osborne looks down, examining his shoes, wondering what could possibly be wrong. Mark then points to Hoffman, causing Osborne to realize he should have left a few seconds ago. Osborne takes off, receiving the baton with a horribly bungled transition that he is glad Coach Johnson did not see. At the transition zone, Eddie asks Mark, "What was that all about?" Mark laughs and explains, "When we ran the 100 earlier, he said he was the master of messing. And he asked if that shit really worked. I told him that I'd show him later. He said he was looking forward to it." Hearing the conversation, Braden comments, "It's a good thing for his ass that Johnson was halfway down the track. Johnson would have been all over his ass for falling for that shit." Eddie announces, "It looks like I'm up." Eddie gets on the track, and Braden gets fired up. Johnson comes around the curve, and Braden starts ranting, "Get down with the boogie." Braden starts singing and dancing to the song Jungle Boogie, as he did on the track years ago while at the university. Johnson hands off to Eddie, demonstrating yet another flawless transition of the baton. Braden steps onto the track, out of the way of Ray Jones, who is waiting for Osborne to arrive. Braden dances, exclaiming, "Gonna kick an ass," and landed in the grass. The chief ass kick is back and ready to attack. "Back on the track, so you better stand back. This race we're gonna win, and then I'm gonna grin." Eddie Lee Washington, the high school's anchorman and now their best 400-meter man, is secretly studying Braden, getting a few ideas for himself for when the track season starts. Osborne delivers the baton to Jones, who has a lot of ground to make up. Back in the VIP section, Kathy exclaims, "They might just do it." Athena asks, "Do what?" Kathy replies, They really wanted to break 3 minutes out here today. And they are going to do it. Kathy stands up, watching Eddie as he sprints out of the final curve. Eddie hands off to Braden, and Kathy jumps up and down, exclaiming, 2 minutes and 11 seconds. They are going for it. Athena, now knowing why Kathy is so excited, also stands up and follows Kathy to the finish line. Mr. Fraser, who stood up and walked to the finish line earlier, and Johnson watch closely as Braden circles the track like a machine. Mr. Fraser's excitement rises as Braden enters the back straightaway. Looking at his stopwatch as Braden crosses the 200-meter mark, Mr. Fraser exclaims, "Get as many watches as we can on him." He's clocking. Braden tears up the track coming out of the final curve, delivering exactly what he promised a minute earlier. Eddie Lee Washington, who just received the baton from Jones, can't believe what he is seeing. When Washington is about 100 meters down the track, Braden crosses the finish line. 5 stopwatches document the still undefeated relay team's time. Wasting no time, Mr. Fraser asks Kathy, "What do you got?" Kathy yells out, "I got a 255.7. They did it. Eddie, Mark, and Johnson exchange high fives, fist bumps, and victory hugs. Kathy jumps up onto Eddie's hips, telling him, "You guys broke your old record." The relay team's accomplishment finally sinks into Eddie's head, who thought the celebration was for breaking 3 minutes. Mr. Fraser, totally ecstatic, exclaims, "These guys did it. They broke their own record. They were clocking. Can anyone believe it?" The celebration calms down for a moment as Eddie Lee Washington approaches the finish line. Crossing the finish line with a time of 3:38.3, the high school team certainly had their work cut out for them. Eddie and his crew give the high school relay team high fives and fist bumps, encouraging them to keep up the good work. Although the high school team got beat, they are very happy that they got to run with the world record holders in their event. It's one race they'll all remember for the rest of their lives. On the walk back to the VIP seating area, the energy level rises tremendously, but, as in most high school track meets, the 4x400-meter relay is the last event. Dr. Zunday announces, "I certainly wasn't expecting to make this announcement today either." The 4x400-meter undefeated relay team of Edward Boganskaya, Mark Svoboda, Axel Braden, and Eric Johnson have just broken the world record that they, themselves, set 5 years ago, running the 4x400-meter relay in 2:55.7. Please join me in congratulating these amazing guys. Dr. Zunday claps, and the spectators clap and cheer, never expecting to see the level of performance they have seen today. The undefeated relay team waves to the crowd, glad to see that the training they've been doing over the years has paid off. At the VIP seating area, Dr. Zunday mentions to Mr. Fraser, "I sure wish we had used the electronic timers. I certainly was not expecting to see 2 records broken today." Mr. Fraser replies, "Me either. These guys are every bit as good, if not better, than when they ran for the university." Dr. Zunday observes, "In the understatement of the day, they have definitely been training." With the planned events now over, Dr. Brooks returns to the podium, announcing, "This certainly has been a day to remember. What an awesome inaugural this day has been, with 2 unofficial world records set here today. I sincerely hope that all of you had a wonderful morning. Our special guests today, seated to my right, will stay around following today's program. Please come down and take the opportunity to meet them before you leave. And please stop by and meet our high school's track team, who are seated on the team bench to my far right. Again, I thank all of you for taking time out of your schedule to join us on this very special day." Dr. Brooks steps down from the podium, and today's ceremony comes to a close. After the ceremony, many of the guests head home. Those guests who are more interested in track and field take Dr. Brooks up on her invitation to meet those playing a part in today's program. Before the crowd descends upon the group, Dr. Brooks walks up to Eddie, Mark, Braden, Johnson, Mitchell, and Bobby B. to personally congratulate them. The high school track team walks over from the team bench, all wanting to meet today's special guests. Mark mentions to Dr. Brooks, "You forgot part of the ceremony." Paula quickly tells Mark, "That wasn't part of today's program, and you know it." Dr. Brooks asks, "Am I missing something here?" Paula replies, "I had absolutely nothing to do with it." Mark replies, claiming, "I take full responsibility." Eddie laughs, prompting Dr. Brooks to ask, "What have you guys done?" Mark replies, "When we built the new dumpster enclosure for the administration building, we put a plaque on the side of it." Knowing this is going to be funny, Dr. Brooks smiles and asks, "And just what does this plaque say?" Mark replies, "It reads, Welcome to the Maurice Crumb Honorary Dumpster. One man's trash is another man's treasure. We had that made when we were working on the track a while ago." Dr. Brooks laughs and exclaims, "I'll have to stop and take a look at that on my way out." The first of the college track coaches out of the stands is Dr. Larry Gable, who makes a beeline toward David Hall. Announcing his entry, Dr. Gable asks Hall, "Are you David Hall?" With a typical high school answer, Hall replies, "That's me. The one and only." Hall apparently knows he is good. So does Dr. Gable. Dr. Gable tells Hall, "If you have a moment, I'd like to speak with you about running for my university." Hall bluntly tells Dr. Gable, "I'm running for state. They gave me a good deal. So, I'm going for it." Not taking no for an answer, Dr. Gable tells Hall, "We can certainly match any deal that they've given you." Hall confidently replies, "Yeah. But you ain't got Mr. Fraser or Dr. Layton. I'm running for them." Hall apparently knows who can best further his track career. Hitting a brick wall, Dr. Gable tries a few more angles attempting to get Hall to change his mind, but to no avail. Walking away sorely disappointed, Dr. Gable now has a better understanding of why Mr. Fraser and the university win all the time, and he does not. Recalling that Mr. Fraser mentioned that, when David Hall was a freshman, he ran somewhere on the order of a 6-minute mile and is now close to breaking 4 minutes, Dr. Nicholson approaches Barbara, hoping to get some answers of how that was accomplished. Introducing himself, Dr. Nicholson rudely interrupts Barbara, who is talking with Cindy Hayes and the girls from middle school, announcing, "I'm Dr. Nicholson, from..." Not allowing Dr. Nicholson to finish his introduction, Barbara kindly replies, "I know who you are. I'm in the middle of something very important right now. I'm sorry, but it will have to wait." Dr. Nicholson, with his conceited attitude, somehow believes that what he has to discuss with Barbara is far more important than Barbara's discussion with the middle school girls. Dr. Nicholson walks away and will look for an opportunity to talk with Barbara later. Walking out into the red zone by himself, Mr. Fraser takes a look at the new track and field venue. A vast improvement over the old gravel track, the new venue is on par with the best tracks in the world. Mr. Fraser is happy for Johnson, who will be now better equipped to prepare his team for advanced competition when they graduate. Walking out to the 65-meter mark in the red zone, Mr. Fraser looks back toward the launching zone for the field implements, recalling that Eddie consistently threw the discus this distance. Seeing Mr. Fraser alone, Athena walks out to the red zone. Walking up to Mr. Fraser, Athena asks, "George, what are you doing out here all by yourself?" George replies, "Athena, they dedicated this track to me. I don't deserve this. They are the winners. Not me. The best I ever did was to come in fourth place." Athena reassures George, "If it wasn't for you, George, none of this would have been possible. If one man has ever made a difference in this sport, it's you. The men and women you've coached over the years all know that." George confesses, "I thought it was over for Eddie, Mark, Braden, and Johnson. And look what they did today. They broke their old record." Barely able to get the words out, George explains, and look at Mitchell. All during his stay at the university, Mitchell was after the world record in anything he could get his hands on. He was always coming up just a little short. Today, he gets out there and smashes the world record in the mile. Showing some emotion, George reiterates, Mitchell not only broke the world record, Athena. He destroyed it. Athena quickly realizes that George clearly sees something that no one else has observed today. George tells Athena, "Athena, I came out here to see where Kathy's discus landed. They never took a measurement." Pointing to the ground, George tells Athena, "There's the divot, right there, at about 69 meters. That's somewhere around 5 meters off the women's world record." Not only that, Athena, Kathy's throw was dead center, right down the middle of the red zone. Astonished, Athena exclaims, "I see that now. No one throws the discus that far and accurately unless they've been practicing." Mr. Fraser confirms, "She's been practicing. You can be sure of it." George tells Athena, "Bobby B's shot put throw was just past 21 meters. That's 1.5 meters off the world record for a casual Saturday morning throw. Athena, these guys are up to something. I can see it. They've all been training, and training hard." Athena replies, "I see that. The performance we saw out here today, George, would easily take the gold medal in any of our divisional meets." Athena asks, "Have you found the divot for Bobby B's hammer throw?" Mr. Fraser replies, "Yes. He threw the hammer about 76 meters. That's also not a bad throw for a Saturday morning." Looking back at the launching zone roughly 250 feet away, Athena reaffirms George's suspicion, telling him, "I see what you mean, George. Bobby B's hammer throw would have taken the gold medal at the divisional meet last year. Not only that, if I am not mistaken, his shot put and hammer throw would be qualifying distances for the Olympic tryouts." Mr. Fraser replies, "There would be, Athena. Just like Kathy's discus throw." As they walk back to the VIP seating area where many people are still congregated, Athena suggests, "Perhaps, George, they have their eyes on the next Olympics. That's only about 3 years away." George replies, "I don't know. I just don't know, Athena. I can only imagine what would have happened if they had some serious competition out here today." Athena points out, "I can't see why anyone would keep their training up to that level unless they plan to compete." George replies, "I agree." Arriving back at the VIP seating area, Mr. Fraser and Dr. Layton suddenly find themselves inundated with people who want to speak with them. While Mr. Fraser and Athena were out in the red zone, Kathy has been reunited with one member of her fan club from her high school days. Now 20 years old, Melissa was 9 years old when Kathy was a senior in high school. As Kathy and Melissa talk, Melissa tells her story, "I so remember when I was in elementary school. My dad drove me around town one Saturday morning when my mom was setting up the house for my surprise birthday party. My dad said to me, 'Let's go see what's going on at the high school.' So, we drove in and watched the track meet for a while. And I saw you throw the discus. I was seriously impressed. After that, I made my dad take me to every track meet that year. And I was so sad when you weren't there the next year. Okay, so anyway, that year, I told my dad I wanted a discus for my birthday. So, for my birthday, my dad gave me an IOU for a discus. He managed to find one for me a few weeks later." Kathy asks, "Are you still throwing?" Melissa, who is never at a loss for words, replies, "I sure am. I'm throwing for the University of Florida. I leave Monday to go back to school. I am so glad I ran into you again today. And, by the way, your throw earlier was fantastic." Kathy replies, "Thank you. I'm still throwing a lot," then asks Melissa, "Did you want to take a throw?" Suddenly excited, Melissa replies, "Sure. I'd love to." Kathy walks over and asks Johnson for the discus, who tells her it is lying on the ground under the VIP seats. Cindy Hayes asks Kathy, "Are you going to throw the discus?" Kathy replies, "I'm not. Melissa is, though. Did you want to come and watch?" Cindy, speaking for herself and her friends, replies, "Yeah." At the discus pad, Kathy tells Melissa, "Go for it. Show your new fan club what you can do." Melissa gets onto the discus pad, knowing that her performance is being closely watched. Going into the wind-up and into the spin, Melissa releases the discus, which soars high through the air. The discus comes to its resting spot at about the 50-meter mark. The middle school girls cheer, happy to have the privilege of seeing the discus thrown from up close. Kathy, Melissa, Cindy, and her friends all go out together to retrieve the discus. When they return, Melissa inquires of Kathy, "Okay, so, tell me what you thought. And, you don't have to be nice. If I was doing something wrong, I definitely want to know about it." Cindy listens carefully as Kathy explains to Melissa, "If your release angle was a little lower, like 40 to 42 degrees, the discus would go farther. If I had to guess, your release angle was slightly over 45 degrees. Melissa replies, "Really? One of the guy discus throwers told me that 45 degrees is the optimal release angle." Kathy explains, "No, hun. That's only true in a vacuum. At your distance, slightly more than 40 degrees will get you a lot farther. Go ahead and give it another try. But release it at a slightly lower angle this time." Melissa gets onto the discus pad again, reminding herself to release the discus at a lower angle. Going into the wind-up and into the spin, Melissa releases the discus, which soars through the air at an angle lower than her first attempt. The discus comes to its resting spot slightly beyond the 55-meter mark. Kathy, Melissa, Cindy, and her friends all go out again to retrieve the discus. Finding the discus at 57 meters out, Melissa tells Kathy, "Wow. You were right." Kathy smiles, knowing that she was right. And Cindy, who aspires to throw the discus someday, learned something today. When they return to the discus pad, Kathy asks Melissa, "Did you have Miss Amherst for physics?" Melissa replies, "No. That was the year she had her baby." Kathy explains, "Miss Amherst always went over the optimal release angles for the field implements during physics class." Kathy and Melissa talk more about track and field as they teach Cindy and her middle school friends how to properly throw the discus. Meanwhile, off to the side, Mitchell is interviewing Barbara on camera, creating footage for the documentary he is producing on track and field. Eddie, Mark, Braden, and Johnson stand by and watch, as they will be interviewed by Mitchell next. Bobby B., who has already been interviewed by Mitchell, is 50 feet away, showing off his shot put skills to a few guys on the high school track team who are interested. Disrupting the interview, Dr. Nicholson, accompanied by Todd McCutcheon, walks up, asking Barbara, "Is this a good time to talk?" A bit peeved, Barbara replies, "It certainly is not. We're filming." Seeing that Barbara is ticked off, Mark, standing off to the side, yells out to Dr. Nicholson, "Hey, Junior. What are you? Some sort of idiot." Turning around and immediately recognizing Mark, Dr. Nicholson exclaims, "Hey. Shut up." McCutcheon tells Dr. Nicholson, "Those guys are a bunch of idiots." Now realizing exactly who is disrupting Mitchell's work, Mark yells out, exclaiming, "Hey. Check it out. It's the Dogpatch University clown crew." Angela Meadows yells out to her film crew, "Keep rolling. Maybe we can use this somehow." Mark stands in front of the camera, announcing, "This is Mark Svoboda, here at the dedication of the new Northside High School track. With me now is Dr. Nickeldick and Todd McCrutchen." Mark then points to McCutcheon and exclaims, "Todd McCrutchen, here, got bitten by a prickly sea spider 10 years ago. The bite has gone full circle. McCrutchen's brain is now all rotted away." It's mush, I tell you. All mush. McCutcheon yells out at Mark, hey. Shut up, asshole. Looking into the camera, Mark announces, as you can tell, since his prickly sea spider bite, McCutcheon hasn't been able to handle stress at all. He's falling apart physically and mentally. Dr. Nicholson advises McCutcheon, just ignore him. Looking into the camera and messing around, Mark replies, yes, everybody. You heard it right out of the horse's ass. Himself, Dr. Nickeldick. Just ignore me. Ignore me when I say that Dr. Nickeldick, from Dogpatch University, fixes races because he's involved with organized gambling. Ignore me when I say that Dr. Nickeldick steals binoculars, cameras, and microphones, then uses them to spy on other teams so he can set the odds better. Ignore me when I say that Dr. Nickeldick sends McCutcheon over to the State University to steal our performance records and spy on our team. And, boys and girls, since Dean Grimsby, Mr. Crum, and Crum's rich uncle are out of the picture, Dr. Nickeldick is now the head of the gambling ring. You heard me right. Nickeldick is the top dog running the Dogpatch University gambling ring. Yeah, just ignore me. Ignore the truth. Dr. Nicholson's blood suddenly begins to boil, suggesting that Mark, who is only playfully messing around, has spoken the hard and fast truth. Losing his composure, Dr. Nicholson rushes Mark, intending to tackle him. Quick on his feet, Mark evades Dr. Nicholson's attack, who lands hard on the ground. Mark again looks into the camera and announces, could it be, ladies and gentlemen, that Dr. Nickeldick got bitten by a prickly sea spider too? Dr. Nickeldick is losing it. He's going to crack. McCutcheon again yells out at Mark, hey. Shut up already. Mark asks the camera operator, can we get a close-in shot of Todd McCutcheon? The camera operator obliges, but McCutcheon attempts to evade being on camera. The camera again focuses on Mark, who announces, McCutcheon, here, began his criminal career years ago by crashing my wedding. Then, McCutcheon moved on to planting steroids in Eddie's locker and my locker when we ran for the university. Then, when that didn't work, McCutcheon planted pot in a few of our June buggies. Then, Todd McCutcheon started to work for Dr. Nickeldick and broke into the State University and tried to steal our performance records. And then, McCutcheon tried to steal Tessa's June buggy. And now, McCutcheon is Dr. Nickeldick's left-hand man in the gambling ring. McCutcheon moves into attack Mark, but Mark evades his every move, announcing, McCutcheon's going crazy. I'm telling you. It's the prickly sea spider bite. His brain has turned to mush. Mush, I say. Mush? Just look at him. Dr. Nicholson stands up and, reaching into his jacket, pulls out a gun. Those who are standing around react and, in shock, some run for cover. Johnson runs to the storage building, where he uses the telephone to call the police. Braden, who has been watching the entertainment, acts quickly and rushes Dr. Nicholson. Quickly disarming Dr. Nicholson, Braden tackles the would-be shooter, making sure he hits the ground with enough force to severely injure or break something. During the action, Mark gets down on the ground as if he is officiating a wrestling match. Pointing to Braden, Mark raises his right hand into the air, holding up two fingers, signifying a two-point takedown. Searching Dr. Nicholson for more weapons, Braden exclaims, whoever your fat ass is, it's under arrest. Joining in on the action is McCutcheon, who rushes Braden. Attempting to shove Braden off of Dr. Nicholson, McCutcheon is tossed off to the side by Mark like a rag doll. Mark looks into the camera, giving the football hand signal for illegal motion. McCutcheon again attempts to rush Braden, but Eddie steps in, detaining McCutcheon. McCutcheon, however, is kicking and attempting to bite Eddie. Kicking McCutcheon's ankles out from under him, Eddie shoves McCutcheon to the ground. Grabbing McCutcheon by his ankles, Eddie plans to try McCutcheon out as a hammer. McCutcheon threatens Eddie, firmly telling him, this time, you asshole, I'm getting you back once and for all. You're going to pay. As the camera focuses on Eddie, Mark, knowing exactly what is going to happen, announces, "Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. You are about to see a demonstration of the hammer." Firmly holding McCutcheon's ankles, Eddie goes into the spin, building up good momentum. With all eyes and a video camera on Eddie, Eddie releases McCutcheon, who soars through the air. Still playing around, Mark announces, "With a throw using the 130-pound hammer, Eddie has set the world record here today. And check it out. The hammer got damaged during the throw. The hammer will definitely have to be sent back to the factory to be repaired." Hoffer yells out to Mark that hammer was damaged a long time ago. As the camera operator now focuses back to Braden and Dr. Nicholson, Mark continues to call the play-by-play, exclaiming, "You got to watch out, people. This is what happens when you get bit by a prickly sea spider. I'm telling you." The brain turns to mush. The adrenal glands turn to mush. The tendons turn to mush. Everything turns to mush. Braden, now having Dr. Nicholson restrained in an arm lock, asks him, "Are you gonna tell me what you were gonna do with that gun?" Dr. Nicholson exclaims, "Let me go. You're hurting me." Braden tells Dr. Nicholson, "I ain't begun to hurt your ass yet, Junior." Braden tightens the arm lock, causing Dr. Nicholson to scream out in pain. Captain Hayes, who was headed to his car, runs over, asking Braden, "What do we got going on here?" Braden replies, "This guy, whoever he is, tried to attack Mark. But that's not the problem. He pulled a gun, and it looked like to me he was gonna use it." Now alarmed, Captain Hayes asks, "Where is this gun now?" Pointing toward the shot put pad, Braden replies, "It's over there, laying on the ground. Johnson's guarding the gun." Captain Hayes instructs Braden, "Keep him detained until I can get a uniform officer out here." Johnson tells Captain Hayes, "I called them from the storage building. They are on their way." Captain Hayes asks Dr. Nicholson, "You. What's your name?" Dr. Nicholson replies, "And just who are you?" Displaying his badge, Captain Hayes replies, "I am Captain Richard Hayes, 7th Precinct. Now, I am going to ask you one more time. What is your name?" Dr. Nicholson replies, "Dr. James Nicholson. I demand to be let go." Captain Hayes firmly replies, "With a gun on the ground that will not be touched until a uniform officer gets here, you will remain detained. Deal with it." Braden informs Dr. Nicholson, "Just like I told you, your fat ass ain't going nowhere, Junior." Meanwhile, as Captain Hayes and Braden detain Dr. Nicholson, McCutcheon remains motionless on the ground. Barbara goes out to check on McCutcheon, finding that he is still alive and conscious. Barbara tries to check McCutcheon's vital signs, but McCutcheon pulls himself away. McCutcheon, by fighting Barbara, is suggestive enough that he is not too severely injured. Officer Wilson arrives and is briefed as to what the problem is by Captain Hayes. Officer Wilson places Dr. Nicholson in handcuffs and arrests him. Now that Dr. Nicholson is properly restrained, Officer Wilson bags the evidence, a gun that Dr. Nicholson claims was removed from his person by Braden, and tossed aside. Insisting that he never drew his weapon, Dr. Nicholson forgets that the film crew was recording his every move. Once Dr. Nicholson is taken into custody by Officer Wilson, Captain Hayes advises Braden, "If the gun wasn't an issue, I would have had you release this character under the advisement that he'd better not move. If he decided to run, it gives good reason to take him down again. And I'm talking about a hard takedown." Braden, who is quite good at hard takedowns, smiles and replies, "Got it." Before Dr. Nicholson is taken away, in a pleasant tone of voice, Dr. Layton inquires of him, "Dr. Nicholson, if my recollection is correct, I believe you had some questions regarding the funding of this track. I do hope, sir, that all your questions were satisfactorily answered today." Quite embarrassed by his behavior, Dr. Nicholson is silent. Mr. Fraser yells out to Dr. Nicholson, "Hey, Jim. Thanks for coming out. I hope you enjoyed your day." Dr. Nicholson is taken away, leaving many wondering why the Dogpatch University track coach badly lost his composure today. With Dr. Nicholson gone, the question remains what to do with Todd McCutcheon. McCutcheon, voicing his opinion, exclaims, "I want Eddie arrested." Captain Hayes asks McCutcheon, "What are the charges?" McCutcheon exclaims, "He assaulted me." Eddie tells Captain Hayes, then, "I want McCutcheon arrested." Captain Hayes asks Eddie, "And what are your charges?" Eddie explains, "When Braden was disarming Dr. Nicholson, McCutcheon attacked Braden. Mark threw McCutcheon off of Braden, but McCutcheon attacked Braden again. So, I pulled McCutcheon off of Braden and detained him. Then, McCutcheon started to kick me and tried to bite me. So, I tried him out as a hammer." McCutcheon exclaims, "He's lying. He's making it up." Eddie calmly replies, "McCutcheon is full of shit, as usual. It's all on camera. They were filming it." Suddenly, McCutcheon looks very worried. Adding fuel to the fire, Captain Hayes asks McCutcheon, "Todd McCutcheon, are you aware that Axel Braden is an officer of the law?" McCutcheon replies, "Yeah. But this isn't the college." Captain Hayes informs McCutcheon, "That doesn't matter. You interfered with an officer doing his duty of upholding the law. And if you initiated the confrontation, what happens to you after that is your problem. I could arrest you right now." Hearing Captain Hayes' remarks, McCutcheon bolts out. Mark comments, "Wow. I've never seen McCutcheon run that fast." Seeing Captain Hayes idle, Braden asks, "Do you want me to chase his ass down?" Captain Hayes replies, "No. We can always pick him up later. It's this other character that I'm more concerned about." Mr. Fraser reminds Captain Hayes, "Nicholson is the guy that you were never able to link to the gambling ring years ago. But we suspected he was involved somehow, since he was always spying on our team." Mark comments, "That guy really lost it when I said something like, 'Boys and girls, since Dean Grimsby and Mr. Crum are out of the picture, Dr. Nickeldick is now the head of the gambling ring.' He really went psycho after that." Captain Hayes sighs and replies, "This incidence of assault and brandishing a weapon is going to open a big can of worms. I can see it coming a mile away." Officer Hayes informs Angela Meadows, "I'm going to need a copy of any video evidence you have." Angela replies, "No problem. We captured the whole thing on tape." The cameraman points to Mark and comments, "That guy was awesome on camera. We might have a job for him." Paula tells the cameraman, "Only if it's comedy. You're not getting Mark to act serious in front of a camera." The cameraman replies, "I saw that." Captain Hayes asks Mark, "So, you were just messing around? And you weren't being serious?" Mark replies, "Yeah. I was just playing around and messing with them." Captain Hayes tells Mark, "If that character went off the deep end like that, you must have really hit a nerve. Now, I really want to see this video." Angela reassures Captain Hayes, "I will definitely get it to you." With most everyone gone, Mark comments, "Well, today didn't go exactly as planned." Dr. Layton points out, "I can just imagine what would have happened if Dr. Nicholson lost it during a meet. We could have had a mass shooter on our hands." Mr. Fraser replies, "At least everyone is safe. And as a side benefit, we got another gambler out of the way." Johnson and his student assistants finish putting away the field implements and starting blocks. Now a few minutes after noon, Kathy asks, "Now what?" Paula looks at Kathy and asks, "Do you really have to ask, girl?" Dawn whispers to her mother, "It's Saturday. Does this mean we get pizza now?" Paula replies, "Yeah. We're going to get pizza now." Dawn jumps up and down and claps, exclaiming, "Pizza." The tribe, Mr. Fraser, Dr. Layton, Dr. Brooks, and many other invited guests head to the pizzeria, where they will enjoy a peaceful lunch.